This episode of The Edge is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, I'm Rekha Sharma, and I played Landry on Star Trek Discovery. You are listening to The Edge on Trek FM.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Edge, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to Star Trek Discovery. I'm your host this week, while Amy is away fighting control to save all podcasting sentient life. But I can't do this alone, so I have with me a very special guest. Welcome, Chris Tribuzio. How are you, Chris?
Patrick? Patrick Devlin? Oh my god, is that Spumoni?
Yes!
Okay, do me a favor. Put it to the side, and I need you to get me chocolate chip cookie dough.
Oh, I got it.
On top of that, I want you to put some butterscotch, some chocolate syrup. And once that's all done, we'll go walk and talk about the episode.
Sounds good.
How you doing, Patrick? I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on.
I'm doing great. Glad to get the podcast with you again. We haven't podcasted in a while, actually, so this should be fun.
Not to sound like I know numbers, but warp 5-152.
There you go. Wow. I wouldn't have been able to figure it out.
Only because it's on my desktop.
Nice. So, yeah, there's been a lot of episodes in between then and now, between Warp 5 and The Edge, so it's been a bunch. The real reason Amy's not here is, actually, she's going to be here tomorrow and having dinner with me and my family. She's visiting New York and stopping by, which is pretty cool. So I got to meet Amy the other night and had a good time.
How'd it go?
That was fun. I met Amy, I met Christy Littlefield, and I met Laz, the one we did the interview with for, he does all the art for each of the episodes.
Yes.
And he does his own personal posters. So I met them. We met up, had a couple drinks, talked Star Trek most of the time, and then, you know, went our separate ways.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, I had to go to work in like 4 hours from then, so.
Yeah, it's a shame Amy's not here, because then I'd have the best of both coasts.
Yes, yes.
But unfortunately, well, she's not.
But we got you filling in for that coast.
Thank you. I can only aspire to be as good as Amy and you. So
thank you very much. Yeah, kind words. Most people don't agree with you. anyway, we're not here to talk about where Amy is or what I'm doing or maybe what I'm cooking for dinner tomorrow. What we are here to talk about is the latest episode of The Edge, wrong. We are here to talk about the latest episode of Discovery, which is Such Sweet Sorrow. So, Chris, what were your initial thoughts on this episode?
Here's my initial thoughts. I can, you know, I don't know if you're aware of this, but I do three words in three watches on Twitter. And the only three words I can come up with is a title of a TNG episode. Amy, thinking of you. It's going to be called All Good Things. So many things in this episode warm the heart, from the view of the Enterprise to the music and to the characters, but the cliche can be extended to include the four W's. Who, what, when, and where. Part of the first episode of a two-parter, I thought it was okay. It's the suspense leading up to the action in the end. But the character moments couldn't be beat.
So, okay, my initial thoughts, it's a hard one to judge because, like you said, it is a two-parter, right? So we do need the second half to really judge the first half. Because if the second half bombs or doesn't really play with what happened in this one, then it changes how important this one is, right? However, two-parters are weird in a series that's serialized. They're all supposed to lead into each other. So I'm scratching my head now because I'm a little confused as to if they're writing episodic or serialized TV. again, which in the middle of this series, this season, they seem to really grasp a hold and really run with the serialized nature of the show. In the beginning and end, they kind of went more episodic in their nature of writing. So we'll see where it goes from here, but I don't know. I was a little confused by just the way they wrote it. Now, I agree with you. The character moments were great. And I agree with that throughout all the whole season. So, I don't know. It was just a little weird that they have this obvious two-parter in a larger series that should all be continuations.
And it's a good point that you do that, and that's what one you would think in a two-parter would be more natural for episodic television. Whereas in this day and age, with the advent of serialized television, it's not really a two-parter. It's 13 of 14.
Correct.
Because they all tie in together. You may have a couple of standalone episodes, but really the standalone episodes do have those minute aspects that tie into the next episode or previous one.
Right. And I mean, the last episode, so this is episode 13. Episode 12 did really flow right into episode 13. They did. So this could really be a three-parter. But it felt like this was a distinct two-parter to me, not a three-parter, even though the story did actually flow pretty well into this one. It, I don't know. Something about it just felt distinctively different than the one before. The other thing that I don't like, and it's not a Star Trek issue, it's just an issue with serialized television, and it's that we knew right from the beginning we were getting Poe back. Because since they haven't talked about it since Short Treks, they show it to you in the previously on, which happens in all the serialized television. When they go back to something they haven't talked about in 7, 8, 9 episodes, they want to tell you about it again to remind you so you understand it when it happens. But I'd rather they just didn't. I'd rather that wasn't a part of serialized TV. But that's not a Star Trek issue. That's just an issue with serialized TV.
I think in the Star Trek world, the one Short Trek we knew we were getting, or we knew we can correlate to, was Calypso. And, you know, the Brightest Star as well, but the series really took a Calypso turn when AI and all the other stuff started coming in. So we knew Calypso was going to play a big part. But again, you're right. You know, you have to call back to something you saw months ago. Luckily, if you have it, or if you have the episode, whether you're streaming it, you can run back, watch it, and then watch it again. But does the story really match up? Because how long has it been since she's seen Poe? She doesn't say.
Right.
So there's...
We don't even know when the Short Treks takes place.
That's correct, yeah.
You know, it could have taken place right when it did, you know, between season one and two, but it could have taken place 2 weeks ago in their time. So, I don't know. It is what it is. My issue is just the previously on, now we know she's coming. Right. They write that so it's a surprise when you're going to that planet, but then they have to ruin the surprise right in the beginning of the episode. And it took away from the surprise that they were going for that I think was a good surprise, storyline-wise.
I think so. I think it was a good one. And you kind of knew it when you seen it in the last episode towards the end, where I guess people were pointing out, oh, they're going to Sahia. You know, and that's when all the Poe fandom was coming around, and that's for people who can actually see it in detail. For me, I don't see beyond it until somebody mentions it, you know, until somebody mentions it, then I'll look at the detail, you know.
Like somebody
I didn't catch it either. Like somebody else mentioned on social media, it might have been the same actor, the science officer on the Enterprise that was in the background was the same actor who was in 2009 Star Trek, who was Kirk's the tough guy.
Okay,
he calls him Cupcake.
Right, right.
That's Cupcake.
I didn't know that.
That's what I heard. Now. I don't know if that was true.
But I'm like you. I wouldn't have caught that. Someone would have to tell me that.
Yeah, I'm more of the obvious type. You know, talk to me about specifics later. Let me look at the obvious first, and I'll go back to it.
Right. Yeah. Same here. So, all right. So, our first topic, what about I wrote this completely wrong in the outline, but what about the evacuation?
Oh, God. Okay. It's a minor nitpick, and I've learned to take my nitpicks and shove them aside because, a little background on me, I was totally against Discovery because I wanted a post-Nemesis series. When they heard Discovery, I thought, why another prequel? As the show kept going on, they started showing images, blah, blah, blah. I was kind of intrigued, but I was still against it. But after I watched Discovery, I took all my nitpicks and put them aside to enjoy the series, to enjoy the first season. So this nitpick, when you come to the evacuation bridges, the only nitpick I have is continuity. You know, you and I are fans of the Enterprise series. So in the Enterprise series, they docked.
Correct.
Okay. Skip to TOS and every series after, they beamed everybody aboard.
Right. Okay, or they use shuttlecrafts.
They use shuttlecraft. Okay. So they beamed everybody aboard. So this whole evacuation bridge thing, I didn't get. Again, it's a nitpick. It reminded me of an airport jetway when you're going from the waiting room to the plane. A very long jetway, all the same. But I kind of got over it. I thought the effects were cool. You know, the interior was more cool than the exterior.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Even the effect of it going over that was kind of cool. Like it was building itself kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of like Legos going together.
Legos going together or like a Transformer.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, or maybe them old G.I. Joe toys where they had the bridge layer and it would just, you know, fold over.
Yep.
cool. You get my reference. All right. So. All that being said, you know, I thought it was pretty cool effects wise. I thought it made for a great 2x scene with Saru and the captain as they were walking. It did add a little bit of dialogue, which I can see why they didn't use the transporters.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not that big. Continuity is important, don't get me wrong. But right. I'm not that big on nitpicking little things like that because honestly, they just didn't have technology to do these kind of scenes in 1960. So they couldn't do them. But okay, fine. It's not going to bother me. I'm not going to let it bother me. Like, the holograms don't really bother me. And they bring that up again. What bothers me more about the holograms is they keep bringing it up than the fact that they have them. And trying to give you a reason why we don't see it on the Enterprise. But I wish they would just move past that and keep going. I like the thing. It was a little weird that, you know, these bridges line up perfectly like it's some kind of Starfleet standard. You know, door here, door here, door here. And if, you know, if you got the dock, you just open up your doors and they come over. But it is what it is. It's not the end of the world, that particular part. Like I said, I thought the scene was cool. You know, just before that,
we end up seeing this conversation with where Pike says, sometimes we know the role we are meant to play and sometimes we don't. Which is really interesting because at this point he's seen his future, but she doesn't know her future. And what I like about the next thing she says is, and we don't know if we have the strength to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, because we as viewers know that Pike does have the strength, right? Because we know how this story ends. But the characters don't.
Correct. And the way Pike talks to her is kind of a confidant, a consoling, because she herself is unsure of what's going to happen, of how she's going to approach everything. And you know, and he knows his role. Yes, we all know his role. And he's comfortable in his own skin, per se. But then what's Burnham thinking, you know, in her head? You know, things can go wrong. Things can go south. Things can go, you know, things can go well. And depending on if she's the pessimist or if she's the optimist, where, you know, always think the worst, hope for the best, to prepare herself for what's going to happen that we haven't seen yet. And I think we'll probably see that in part two.
So this jumps a little ahead in where I was talking, but I think we do see a little bit of the fact that she is a bit of the optimist, even though she seems pessimistic much of the series because she puts everything on her shoulders. But I think we see her optimism in the fact that when she's talking about where she's going, she actually talks about, well, if everything goes right, then I'll end up, you know, my mother was on Terra Elysium 950 years in the future, you know, and everyone tries to like give her reasons why she's not going to end up there too. What could possibly go wrong? And I don't think she's seeing it, you know, like in her mind, she's going to end up on Terra Elysium 950 years in the future.
It's kind of like trying to have someone see your point of view. But that point of view is coming from the outside. You don't know what the other person's thinking. So it's kind of like a battle between two minds.
Yeah, It's very well written scene, that one in particular.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was very well written.
So now Burnham ends up touching the crystal and she sees the future, and it's not a far off future. It's actually somewhat very soon, next episode. And she sees the Enterprise under attack with the torpedo, I guess it is, in its hull. It's very quick. You see that they're obviously in a fight, and it's a bad fight. We get more later on. We get more of that fight, but I'd like to stick to this scene here. What'd you think of this future she sees?
Okay, first thoughts was Leland came in like...
No, that's the second one.
Oh, the first one.
Yeah.
Okay, the first one... I don't know. There wasn't enough to know how it was going to happen. We know it's going to happen. But I think what she's missing is what's going to lead up to it, which is why... Or is that the second one? Hold on. Which is why she says stop. Was that the second one that she has?
No, that's the second one also. Okay, so you're kind of making my point for me here. It's actually almost a forgettable scene, even though it's vitally important.
Mm-hmm.
It also happens before the opening credits, which is interesting.
Okay.
Because all of what we've talked about so far, except for her talking about going to Terra Elysium, mm-hmm. has so far taken place before the opening. We're not even out of the cold open yet. And we've had a ton of stuff happen. We also saw in this cold open, Sarek, Amanda walking to Sarek. Sarek opened his eyes and saying either Michael or Burnham. I forget which word he used. But, you know, so at this point, he now knows there's something wrong. Like this, again, all in the cold open here. And then as they're leaving the ship, I found this interesting. I don't know why it's in the scene, but it is. When Pike gets on the elevator, essentially, with Saru and Michael, he reaches over, grabs a handle, and then says where he wants to go.
Right.
We've never seen that before in this series. We've never seen that before in any other series. I don't get it.
No, it's actually... And he doesn't let go. You're right. I think in the 60s for the Enterprise Bridge, it was just a hold it kind of like a microphone. Okay, deck one and then let go. I don't know whether to call it some sort of pseudo psychological that he doesn't want to let go because though he's accepted his future, does he not want to let go of the present and keep the past in mind, or if it's maybe just something that they just overlooked.
Yeah, it was just weird.
Yeah.
But I thought it was interesting, but it was weird. Again, that also happens all in this.
Yeah, maybe I'm looking too far into it. You know, you talk
about... Yeah, maybe he just grabs it.
Yeah, maybe he just grabs it, or maybe it's because there's, in my eyes, there's time crystals, so... Everything happens for a reason, and we don't know the reason, so we make our own assumptions as such. Speaking of, when you talked about when they go into Turbolift, what were your thoughts on the Enterprise?
The Enterprise itself?
Yes.
I liked it.
Yeah.
I liked the way the bridge, I love the fact that they give you all the old sounds, the little whistle and the boops and beeps and whatnot.
Yeah.
I thought the bridge looked great. I think it looked well for a ship that was originally created in the 60s and is now being recreated in 2019. Mm-hmm. You know, I know some people are going to pick. It did kind of look like it had little buttons and nonsense, you know, back then, but they were obviously better. Mm-hmm. And I get it. There are going to be purists who don't like it, but I don't want that Enterprise.
Yeah.
1960s.
Again, one of my nitpicks from 2 years ago. But was the fact that, you know, bridges were too big, and I got to accept that it's 2018, it's not 1966, so technology has advanced, but you can reimagine it and give to the fans the proper, as you say, fan service, to salute those that enjoyed the TOS series. Another interesting fact I caught online also was the jelly buttons that you saw were actually donated by the Star Trek tour in Ticonderoga.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so they donated, I think, like 200 buttons or somewhere around that number to give to them so they can get that feel of authenticity.
Yeah, and I think they did a good job, to be honest. You know, like, I feel like it was the Enterprise we know and love, but new.
Yeah, it was a newer version. It's it serves its purpose for nostalgia.
Right.
50 plus
years later. Without looking ridiculous.
Absolutely.
You know, because sometimes you can try and update something, it just looks bad. I don't think this qualifies for that. I think this did a good job of updating a classic.
Exactly. You know, you could have put this CGI, but it wouldn't be the same because you can tell the difference.
Right.
But to fabricate it as such, yeah, I thought it was great fan service.
Yeah, me too. So now, when they enter the bridge, I thought that was great that Cornwall was sitting there and she immediately stands up and everyone's in the old, you know, the old classic uniforms.
Right.
You know, which I know people had big issues at one point about the uniforms, but we've never seen a standard uniforms throughout all of Star Trek's universe.
No.
So the fact that two different ships doing two different things have two different uniforms is perfectly okay. I've said this before. I'll say it again. The fact that you saw both on the bridge at this point was awesome, though.
Yeah. I think it was a nice, again, nice fan service to contrast or to differentiate 2018 from 1966.
Yeah, absolutely. So now, what do you think of Georgiou arriving?
How, number one.
Thank you. Where did she come from?
Yeah. Somebody pulled her out of the pocket, maybe. I have no idea. Or maybe a ring from, like, the Flash comics. But to be honest, I don't know where she came from. The character moments, typical Terran, not so used to this universe, quips, I think were just for comedic purposes and just to give a chuckle.
Yeah, and I think at least one of them missed their mark.
I think so.
Because when she goes on, when she goes to say orange, nice choice or something like that, why was she surprised by that? She has the files from the Defiant.
Good point.
Not mine. I don't know if he wants to be giving him credit. If he does, he can write it in the down below. He can mention that it was his. I will back him up on that. I just don't know if he wants to be included in this. Okay. So I'll leave his name out of there. But, yeah, I didn't pick that up. Someone did mention that to me, and and I don't understand. They have the Defiance plan, so she should know. These, in fact, Discovery's clothes should have confused her.
Yeah. Yeah. Even Enterprise's clothes should have confused her. You're absolutely right. But then, I don't know how it is, maybe because my TV's old, but I didn't see orange. I saw like a dark red is what I saw. Maybe it's me.
On who?
On the bridge of the Enterprise. I didn't
see. Well, what'd you see number one wearing?
Well, I saw her wearing the yellow.
Yeah, okay, me too.
Yeah.
And I don't remember if it was reddish or orange on the others.
Oh, it was red. I'm talking the furniture all around. You know, because when Georgiou comes in, she sees the orange.
I think that was
and
red.
Stuff like that. That's what she means by orange. So when I saw it, I saw red for some reason. Maybe it's just my TV.
No, I think I saw red too, and I have pretty new TV.
Yeah.
Well, whatever. I mean,
that's the line that fell short.
Because the Defiant was like the same color schemes, the same uniforms, the same.
Correct. Yeah, so why
general feel?
Yeah. So why be surprised?
Confused. Yeah. Yeah. Just a little weird, but. Other than that, I thought she was all right. I thought her moment with Burnham was good, where Burnham like explains to her that, you know, I'm going to do this, and she's trying to talk her out of it because we're still building that Georgiou loves Burnham story, and I enjoy it. I enjoy that story a lot.
Yeah, I enjoy it too. I think Georgiou's starting to come into her own. Not to be so Terran when it comes to Michael, knowing how Michael had lost her mother before. I think she's still trying to be that mother figure, but she's trying to be like the evil mom, I guess you would say, while still trying to understand the honest, logical Vulcan that is Michael Byrne.
Yeah, and I think the conversation she had with Michael's mom is pushing her even more in that direction, because she basically tells her, and I said this when it aired, but she basically tells her, you can lie to you all you want, but I've seen you save her, and you're going to every time. Hint, hint, wink, wink, guys. Guess who's going to stop her from going into the future and not come back?
Yeah.
It's it would make perfect sense if that's where that line leads us to.
And I think also you see the reciprocation of feelings when she has that second dream sequence where everybody falls and she's right next to Giorgio. And she's fine. She sees Giorgio again. You see the emotion in Burnham's eyes. It's almost like she lost another mother.
Yeah. Oh no. She's crying as if this was her mom.
Exactly. I think it's also on top of everything else that she's seeing, the horror and everything else. But I think it's more seeing Giorgio as well.
I would completely agree, because she immediately grabs onto her and pulls herself to her as to shield her. You know, and. So, yeah, we definitely see that happening between the two of them, both getting closer to each other. Not just Giorgio getting closer to Michael, but the other way around. You know, it's being reciprocated. You know, and in that conversation, Giorgio talks about going and getting Leland, and Michael says a logical thing, where she says what happened to him isn't his fault, basically. You know, it's actually sad what happened to him, because that's not him. He's now being controlled by AI. Giorgio never really liked him anyway. So for her to want to kill him, I mean, she's Taryn. That she doesn't need an excuse. But she says, better him than me or you. Mm-hmm. And the "or you" added on is a big part of this whole theme that we have going on with Giorgio and Michael.
And the whole theme of sacrifice as well. Look, the character of Leland, I thought, was a pawn from the beginning. I personally thought he was a pawn. It's proven because the AI has chosen him to carry out the orders. The minute Giorgio stepped on the scene in this season, I knew she was going to take over. She wanted power. She missed the power. And she'll do anything to regain that power, to keep the power.
I agree. I definitely saw her taking over Section 31. My thought was, she takes over Section 31, she does some dirty stuff, Section 31 gets kicked out, right? And I thought that's where we're going to go with this Section 31 show that's coming, that at the end of it, they were going to be dismembered from Starfleet. I just had hoped that Leland would have gotten to the Section 31 show before that happened. That's not going to happen now. I'm a little upset about that. The writing of it is fine. I mean, they did a good job. It's a good story how it happens. I just would have liked to have seen him a little more,
and
personally.
And I think I share the same sentiment, because I thought for sure Leland was going to be in the Section 31 series. And I thought those were going to be the two main characters. But apparently Giorgio's had, and who knows what characters they're going to show. They may show Ash on there as well.
I definitely think it's going to be Giorgio and Tyler.
Yeah. I could see that too. And that's another
thing. Which is cool.
Yeah.
But Star Trek has always kind of used threes, so I thought it was going to be the three of them.
Yeah. I could see the Holy Trinity. Yeah, I could see
that. They like that threesome thing in Star Trek. It works well. It's a good formula.
Well, who knows? The third person can be someone they warm up to. We're speculating now on a series that God knows how far they are into it, but
I don't even know if they've written a word for it yet, but
yeah, exactly. We're actually writing it for them. Hey, three, three's company, three's company.
Three. Go find Arium again. Yeah. Go find Arium.
How did you think about that? Now, I know we're probably jumping ahead, but I want, because you mentioned the Arium, let's talk about Pike's speech. For me, you can tell it was truly filmed on the last day. The way he talks and he acknowledges every officer that he's worked with. And then I thought it was funny because they mentioned Lieutenant Nilsen, who was the original Arium we played in, says, "Oh, you filled in for her. Nice." It's like,
yeah.
Personally, for me, outside of the script, when once they yelled cut, I probably would have kicked them in. You know? I started the character, "Yeah, replace me, and I'm back. And now you're telling me I'm doing just as good as a job." I made the character who she was.
I took it. This was going to go in nitpicks. I took that line as like a comic ha-ha to the fans who caught it. Right. And I just kind of felt like, yeah, we get it.
Yeah.
You replaced her and then replaced her with her.
I laughed all the same, but back in my head, I was, you know, thinking on behalf of the actress. I don't know if she actually thought that, but in the
case. No, I think... Whatever it was, I don't know why she left. I don't know why she stopped being Arium.
Yeah.
If Arium was only going to die halfway through the season mm-hmm. and be replaced by her. I mean, I know she was in a couple other episodes.
Right.
You know, as herself, not as Arium.
Correct.
Or as the character she is now. Mm-hmm. I just didn't... You could have done that without bringing in a new actress to play Arium, is my only thing. So, whatever. Like I said, it was just kind of a... Let's see who'll pick up on it. Comment, in my opinion,
yeah.
It was just like, oh,
yeah. It's more. It was more or less a throwaway line, but said sentimentally.
Yeah, you know right. I mean? Exactly. I did like the speech though. Overall,
I love the speech. I thought it was great how he recognized every one of them for the job they've done.
Yeah, my only issue is I'm just sick and tired of goodbyes.
I just am.
We were talking about this before.
Yeah.
We came on. It's just like every time someone's leaving, everyone has to stand up. Now, I get it for the captain. I understand. But we had it for Michael, like, you know, mm-hmm. 20 minutes ago. And then we had it for Arium, like, a couple episodes ago. And then we had it for, and I can do this like 7 more times, but I'm not going to go into everybody. But we keep doing this same exact scene.
But I think it
shows. Can we get a different scene?
Yeah, I think it shows that Pike is respectful, respected. And respecting.
No, I understand.
You know what I mean?
But, like, we went to that well one too many times.
No, I get it. I just think that they wanted to shove it in the face just for
one. Yeah, they should have saved it for this episode and not done it every other time, in my opinion.
I can see that.
Because it just kind of fell flat for me, and it shouldn't. It shouldn't fall flat. Because he's the captain, and he's Pike, and we love him, and they love him, and everyone loves him. So, for it to happen this way, it's almost upsetting that... For me, and I know this is not a lot of the listeners. I understand that. I understand if Amy was here, she loved it. She loves Pike. Mm-hmm. I know she loved it. I just talked to her about it on Saturday. You know, it didn't fall flat for her because it's still Pike. But you know what we didn't talk about? We didn't talk about the time they all stood up for Michael because it was the 6th time this season. We talked about Pike because she loves Pike. And we also don't believe Michael's leaving. That is another reason. But
no, I like Pike. But I like the writing for him. Now, this is a character who we only known for 45 minutes. If you want to add in the menagerie, we'll go an hour and a half. So from what the writers did, and they envisionized who he would be, they made him out to be this guy. I like the writers for writing this character, and I would stand by this character because the writers did it. So I am a fan of Pike as well.
Oh, I would say if these writers needed something for a resume... They should put their writing of Pike on their resume.
All day long.
Because it is the... And they've done a great job with characters development this season, but he is by far the best.
Yeah.
And his ability to... It helps that his ability to act this captain was so phenomenal.
Yeah.
Because realistically, they made him be more than one person at different times without seeming like he had split personality.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. Yeah. Like, sometimes he was a very stern... captain, and sometimes he was letting you drop F-bombs on the bridge. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just who he was. He was more lax than other captains unless he had to not be, and then he wasn't, and it was all believable. And I don't care how well it's written, if you can't act it, it's not going to matter how good the writing is.
Correct, and that'll go into my final thoughts as well, but you know, it's what's written for you and how the actor sells what's written.
Right.
And that's basically the point. And the two of them work in sync. And that's why they built this character to someone we love, to give substance to someone we know little about.
Yeah, well, now we know
him. And now we know
him. Now we know Pike. And we can build more context on the menagerie and on Cage based on what we've learned here. And none of it made it feel like the other was a lie or that this... contradicts that in any way, which was great.
Right, yeah.
Part of it is because you only had 45 minutes, really. Because even the menagerie is just using mostly scenes of the cage, right? With some ancillary stuff happening around it, with Pike's not involved in.
Right.
But, so, that helps, because you really have a lot of room to grow. But, I don't know, I thought it was great, and I just think they should have saved this goodbye for him.
Yeah, I think so. I could see your point. I mean, there were way too many. But if this was the only one, this was the time it should have been done.
Right. It just lost impact because we've done it over and over again. But, you know, whatever. Like I said, I'm in the minority here and I know it. I understand that. I get it. I kind of always am in the minority of my beliefs and I'm okay with that. I'm fine with it. Yeah. You know? Some people like me for them. Some people don't. And I'm sorry for the ones who don't. But at least you know I'm honest, I guess. Yeah. I guess that's where we can go with that. So anyway, now we're still on the bridge. Now we're going to finally blow up the Discovery, right? This is where we're getting with all this, even though we jumped all over the episode.
I'm sorry.
And that's not only you. I do it too. And self-destruct doesn't work. So they shoot torpedoes at it. That doesn't work. See, now here's my problem. We just talked up the writers on how great their character development was, right? Mm-hmm. Here's the only here's one of the problems I have with the writers is they back themselves into these corners that they can't get out of logically. How did no one bring up the fact that the data might protect itself before the moment it protects itself?
Reality bites. To borrow a line from a movie. That. I can understand where you're coming from, yeah.
Michael and Spock just went to a ship that shot everybody out into space because they might delete it.
Yeah.
And they didn't think that this might happen here?
Yeah. I can understand your point. I could see about it now looking back on it. I see what's in front of me. I don't understand or comprehend what's going on until someone brings it up. Or I watch it again and again. And it's at a point where I have to watch it multiple times to understand. But seeing your point, I can understand it. It's reality. Reality is, they have the data. The data is going to protect itself. What's the auto-destruct going to do?
Right. It's just going to turn itself off, right. Which is exactly what it did. It's going to put up its shield,
yeah.
Which is what it just did.
It's another person. It's going to act defensive against an offensive strike.
Right. We keep saying that it's not conscious, right? It doesn't have any kind of... But it is. They've proven that to us.
Yeah. Over and over again.
It thinks for itself. It's going to do, even if it's just a one-celled organism, their one cell decides to survive. Mm-hmm. That's what it's doing. And Spock mentions it immediately, that the data may be protecting itself. So, okay. Now that we got that out of the way, let's go back onto Discovery.
Yeah.
Why would you do that? It just shot everyone out into space.
I don't know. And you know, how would you... you're right. How do you justify it? You know, the writers really could have made a better decision in that scene to not have it at all or to find a way to get it off. But if they can't get it off, now that they decided that they can't get it off, something's got to be done. So the next thing to do would be to kill it. But you're talking essentially to a human being who has defensive mechanisms. You know, who knows what's going on, who's adapted herself or itself to the Discovery and knows the patterns and sees what's coming about. So they're going to react accordingly.
Right. I mean, it's weird. So then they go back on and now, which is weird too, but whatever. Look, I don't think they should have gotten to this point. I never thought they should have brought up self-destruct in the first place. Like, you still have a spore drive, just use it.
Yeah.
Okay, we can keep running till we figure this thing out, and that would have been a better option in my opinion, but this is where they went because this is more shocking. They wanted that last shocking scene in episode 12 of we're going to set auto-destruct, prepare for auto-destruct or something. The problem is getting out of it is this answer. This is the answer to get out of
but I think this answer leads to Calypso.
No, I agree. You know what I mean? And so I'm fine with that, but you could have gotten there without the self-destruct problem.
Yeah, it's a dramatization is what it is. They over-dramaed the whole thing.
I'm not trying to say that the writers are terrible. I just think they outthink themselves sometimes and they get too deep into the thought mm-hmm. before they're like, uh-oh, we have to either rewrite the whole season or we have to find a way out of this fast.
Yeah.
And then we end up with, uh-oh. You know, and like, so it is what it is. Burnham sees her future again. This is the time you're talking about before when Leland comes.
Right.
So now Leland comes and starts shooting everybody. Burnham's really upset. We have that whole thing. And then she screams, stop, because they were going to fire another photon torpedo at Discovery, even though the first two didn't do anything. And that's when they decide to go back on the ship and spore jump to Zahia, which we knew was coming, right? Because we just saw previously on, yeah. We were going to see Poe. I'm sorry, Poe, I can't say your real name. That's really long and hard, and I can't believe the actors were able to do it, but I can't. So, which is cool. I did look. I'm kind of glad that was my least favorite of the short treks, to be honest with you.
As mine, So you and I are in the same boat.
There seemed to be a few little holes in there. Like nobody knows that Poe exists, even though people saw them. It is what it is. I did like seeing her. I liked. You know what they focused on that I found really interesting? That her eyelids shuttered the other way.
Oh,
side
okay.
to side instead of up and down, and they like focused on it like 3 or 4 times, like to make a real point of it. Mm. I don't know why they did that, but I thought it was really cool.
I think here's the thing, and you're going to see a lot of this big bang because it's the end of the series. This is where they're going to blow the money wad and put everything they can into it. You know, we see it with the Enterprise redress to the 2018 standard, the effects, and however minor it can be, from the attack that Leland gave to as minor as Poe's eyelids. So they're going to blow all the money for the big bang at the end.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, right? You want to leave a big cliffhanger so people come back for 3.
Right.
In some way, shape, or form. So that might lead to the fact that Michael is trapped in the future, but it won't be true when season 3 starts anymore, in my opinion.
And it's another thing, too, if you don't mind me interjecting, because I don't want to go too far off the outline here. One thing that struck me, I think it was said on Postcards with Amy and Zach, was could the show survive without Discovery? Because for some people, some of the obvious, some would say, oh, the show is based on, or the show is titled after the ship, that is its own character, right? Because it's a character that's always used, but not too many people see ships as characters. So my question is this. Do you think the show could survive without the Discovery? Do you think it would be a Discovery A or another ship, another class of ship?
Okay, so I brought this up last week when I was talking with Amy, actually.
Okay.
And I said, obviously, they're not blowing up the ship because the name of the show is Discovery. And Amy said, well, the writers told us that it's not Discovery because of the ship. It's Discovery because they're going and discovering things. Mm-hmm. Okay, I don't buy it. They're not going to destroy the ship that's named after the show.
Okay.
Even if the show isn't named after the ship is named after the show.
Correct.
It's one way or the other because they both have the same name.
Correct. But see, I'm along the lines with Amy because... And allow me to elaborate here. Okay. So Star Trek Discovery, while the ship's name is the title of the show, if we do lose it, which according to Calypso seems to be where it's headed, will we see a new ship name? Will we see an A? If we do get a new ship, does the show lose its Roddenberry image? The whole thing about Trek is that it's ever learning of the aspect of humanity and all of which it encompasses throughout its 50-plus year run. Discovery is learning, just as we learned the theme of duality in the first season, and in the second season, we learned the aspect of sacrifice. So, in a way, Discovery, I can see Amy's side, is that Discovery is humanity and what's being learned. Everybody's learning, whether it's from each other or from themselves.
Yeah, look, I agree. And I could even see the show surviving without the namesake ship. I just don't buy that they're going to do it. You know, I don't buy that the writers were being honest when they said they're not tied to the ship in any way.
Right.
And I don't buy it because they also told us that season 2 was going to show a lot of the fallout of the Klingon War. When?
Yeah, we only had one episode of the Klingons.
Two, if you count. Two, really two.
Yeah.
But... And next episode is the last episode of the season. So, you know, we didn't really see that either. So, you know, I don't buy they're getting rid of the ship. I don't. And part of that, I get it, people. It's my problem. And it's kind of ruining this two-parter for me because since I don't buy it, and I don't buy they're going to lose Michael because she's going to be the focal point of this series, whole series, not just first 2 seasons, in my opinion, I'm just cynical about it.
No, I don't think you're cynical. I think it's obvious that, you know, because I think everybody's basing it off of Calypso. You know, it's there 1,000 years. So we lose the ship. So we're going to get a new ship. We're going to get a new ship. Da, 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 da. But I don't think you're cynical at all. I think it's just you're pointing what seems to you to be the obvious, that, you know, it's going to happen that way.
Maybe, but that could put an interesting twist, because I'm glad you just said this, because I didn't think about it till when you were just talking. The ship is there for 1,000 years. The ship is there for 1,000 years. You just said that twice, correct, right? Okay. Well, the ship tells Funny Face when he first shows up, well, I was told to sit here, so I've sat here. And one of the questions I had when that aired was, nothing else came across it? No one else from Starfleet came across it? In 1,000 years, nobody else came across the ship.
Good point.
Okay. Well, if it was jumped 950 years into the future and told to sit there past the point of technology existing, then it's very plausible that that ship is sitting 1,950 years from now and did sit there for 1,000 years with no ships coming across it.
I could see that. I could see
it. It would actually make sense. Yeah. Because what we're seeing right now is them telling the ship to autopilot behind Burnham, mm-hmm, and then stay here till I come back. It's very plausible that this episode does actually lead directly to Calypso, mm-hmm, directly to the moment where it's sitting there for 1,000 years. But we didn't factor in a 950-year difference between this episode and when it's told to sit still.
Okay, I see where you're going with it. All right. So it's 1,000 years in the future and another 1,000 on top of that.
Correct.
So it would be 2,000 years total.
Which, almost, yeah. Ish. Which makes sense that nobody ever comes across it and says, huh, there's a ship sitting out here.
I get it. I see where you're coming from. Yeah.
Because I really liked Calypso, but my one problem was, really, nobody saw it.
Yeah. And the old.
Yeah, but that would be true.
Yes, it would be
true.
No, it would.
That nobody saw it if it jumps 950 years in the future.
Absolutely correct. I see that.
So
now,
we might end up getting a new ship.
Yeah. Writers, if you're listening, we figured it out.
Yeah. So quick, write a new episode.
Yeah. I think we just did.
So now, I mean, that makes more sense to me now.
Yeah, it does.
And I didn't think about it before because I didn't just watch Calypso and then see this episode, you know? So, but yeah, I think this is possibly what leads to it. So we might actually see Burnham get that ship to the future. I still don't believe Burnham's not coming back, though.
Yeah, I don't think so. She signed on. There's going to be an explanation as to how, but.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. And now, so, like I was saying earlier, we did see that Burnham's mother tells Georgiou, I know you're going to sacrifice yourself for her. But she can't take the suit because the suit is set for Burnham's bio-neural patterns. So no one else can fly it but her. So that's not going to be the way it gets fixed. So we'll have to wait until next week to see, or later on, because this episode is probably going to release after the episode, by the way, my week's going. So we'll already have our answer by the time you hear this, listener. Sorry. It's been a rough week.
Could release two at the same day.
That's true. So we'll see what ends up happening with that. I do think the ship is going into the future, which is interesting because I did not believe it 10 minutes ago.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
I've never been as influential as I've been in the last 15 minutes. Thank you very much.
Well, hey, I'm glad to have been here to witness it. So now we do have this issue with they're building a new suit. They need to power up the crystal. We need to find a way to do that. So we're going to end up in Zaia, which means we're going to get to see Poe, which is cool. I really like the callback to that episode, to that short, where she's eating ice cream again.
Yeah.
Because she was obsessed with ice cream. I really dug that. And that was a Georgiou comic relief line. Like, ugh, this
goop
is disgusting.
Right.
This bowl of goop. That one hit the mark for me. I did chuckle at that. You know, but then when she was writing up in the air and Jet Reno is like, she's doing quantum mechanics, you know, E equals MC squared type stuff. Yeah. And Poe says something, he goes, I really like her. I really like you too. Like, it's the first time Reno's ever liked somebody.
I know you like Jet Reno.
Love her.
Okay. I didn't. Now notice I said didn't. Because when I saw Jet Reno, all I saw was the comic, the stand-up comic. I have nothing against the stand-up comic. but all I saw was the comic, because that's the lines they fed her all the time, was deadpan humor. She was the McCoy of this, yes, of the season. So there's that deadpan humor. But I gained a new respect for her because she was the engineer in this episode. She finally, yes, became the engineer that everybody was looking forward to, whether you liked her or not. You know, she had the engineer mind.
Yeah, but I think we saw that a little earlier than that, because I thought when she went at Stamets, I mean, I guess they didn't show you too much, but that's what she was doing, locking off the areas.
Oh, when she was, the one episode where she was blocking off and she had the thing on the floor and she was blocking off the door. I can see that, but I think this one counts more. Herself.
I mean, it was still just humor.
Yeah.
But they were showing you that that's where they were going with her, right?
Right.
In the very beginning, when they first find her, she tells you, I'm an engineer, even though I'm playing doctor.
Right.
You know?
And I liked it. That scene with Poe when she's riding in the air kind of got me to think of the movie A Beautiful Mind.
Yes.
Where Russell Crowe is riding on the windows because he's got all these mathematic equations. And it's going through his head. Yes. So it kind of gave me that beautiful mind sense. And I enjoyed that part of it. And she's working out and solving problems in her head and writing it down and such.
Yeah, you also see that in like shows like The Big Bang. You'll see like Sheldon do it sometimes. Or I've watched videos of the way children are taught in Japan. I think it's Japan. I'm sorry if I got that wrong. I don't mean to insult anyone. But they teach math with abacuses still.
Right.
And in some of the more advanced schools, they teach it at a very young age. And then when they get up a little higher, they will still be doing the abacus without the abacus actually being there.
Interesting.
So you'll see their hands going nuts moving the stones.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all, you know, the stones are in their head, just like she's writing in her head.
Yeah.
It's still, you know, but they're still physically doing the motions to keep the count, which it reminded me of something like that, which is I've always found fascinating.
It's interesting you say that, because now that I just said it, what I was talking about, how you correlate it, I remember as a kid doing math like that. Instead of maybe not writing it on paper, if I had to think about something real quick, I would write in the air.
Interesting.
And it would be something like that. So I just found it. It was a great micro scene.
When I got into school, schools started falling away from the don't use your fingers method.
Okay.
But before that, a lot of schools would not want you to count on your fingers, mm-hmm, which I always thought was ridiculous, because how do you care how you get the answer as long as you get the answer? But by the time I went in, you could do it, but I would use my fingers, but not in the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 method, you know, mm-hmm, like I would hold down different fingers to correlate to different multiplication tables or whatever. And now I do a lot of math in my head where you, like, if you have like 8 times 7, you do 8 times 8 and -8, you know,
right,
and then whatever. You just find an easier problem to solve and then do the other smaller math to it. But I never wrote in the air. I never did that.
Yeah. I wrote in the air just in casual conversation. I would do that. I would write in the air. And, you know, I never did it for homework. You know, we always had the marble notebooks where they had the times tables in the back, and it was always 10 by 10. It was
I'm glad you brought that up. In my school, they made us black them out.
Really?
Until 6th grade. Yes, we had a first day of class. We had remember the big black markers that they had in school?
Okay.
Marks a lot.
Yeah.
We had to take the marks a lot and black out the times table.
Wow.
We were never allowed to use them.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was brutal.
Oh, times have changed since I left my hometown.
Yeah. Well, I'm not that far behind.
No, you're not that far at all.
But they have changed.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and we still have the best ice cream.
Yes.
Pizza. Sorry, anyone in Chicago who doesn't believe me. New York still has the best pizza.
So is the pizza. Just saying.
Yep. Now we find out that the crystal is going to burn out if this happens. You know, because the way they can't keep doing it over and over again. I love the way Jet Reno explains it, too. She's like, it's kind of like trying to get a drink of water at a waterfall. It'll work. But then you'll drown.
Again, engineer.
Yes, it was just a good thing. So, you know, and this is when we get we talked about it already, so I'll just touch it real quick. This is when we get in theory, Michael will land on Terralysium 950 years in the future, you know, providing that nothing goes wrong. This is a short part. We can touch on it real quick. But as they're preparing for Section 31, which happens in between what we just spoke about, you know, Number one says she commandeered the tactical shuttle crafts, assuming the poop would hit the fan. What tactical shuttle crafts? Where'd they come from?
Yeah.
Who brought them here? Yeah. Why are there so many of them, and why do they sound like pod racers?
I can only justify this by saying that it calls back to Admiral Cornwell calling to Pike as to the reason why they left him out of the Klingon War, because of the best. And I can only think that the Enterprise was the best that's been made. So they had all the bells and whistles.
Yeah, okay.
I could see. That's the only reason. My reasoning in my head canon is the only reason I can come up with it.
But there's like hundreds of shuttlecrafts flying around this ship.
Yeah, how that came about, I don't know. Whether it was docked at whatever starbase it was docked at, and they decided to do a quick turnaround and, you know, soup up a couple shuttlecraft and see you later. But the shuttle pods is like, how do you outfit a work? That was like worker bees, right? So how do you outfit a worker bee ready for attack? The worker
bee it was is a little weird. Traveling. I mean, they look cool.
Right.
They look cool. The scene, I know the scene drove Amy nuts, but it was like upside down as it flew in.
Oh, I got a new term.
The whole ship spun over.
I got a term for that. Ready? Hold on. So, you know, Doctor Who has timey-wimey stuff, right? So,
yes.
I think I wrote down, let me see how I wrote it. Oh, spinny-winny topsy-turvy.
We're using that from now on.
You can credit me with that every time you do that.
I'm not only crediting you with that, I'm also naming this episode that. So
nice, I get to name an episode.
That's definitely going down. But that's exactly what happened. I thought it was a cool scene. I know when I saw it, I thought, ooh, Amy's going to hate it. But
I said that the thing same didn't thing. Just,
that didn't just twist. That thing spun all the way upside down.
Yeah. I said the same thing. I was like, I was looking, you know, it was sad, was I was actually looking for it because we've been in an episode without it. We haven't been in an episode without it, so.
No, not one. Yeah.
And I was actually looking for it. I'm like, there's going to be one, and I'm going to exploit it.
Yeah, that was it. That was, I think, one of the only ones, but yeah. It was cool. The ship was like black and red, which was kind of cool.
Yeah.
They had like a, they did have like a menacing feel to them.
Right.
It was just weird that they were there. It was weird that, I don't know. It was weird that, like, Leland was 10 minutes behind them, and I don't know.
But going back to the ships, though, those worker bees are transport ships. They're meant for short travel. How do you outfit what looks like an eyeball if you take an eyeball out of a socket? I mean, that's what it looks like. If, you know, you have the eyeball and then you have the nerves in the back. That's what it looked like to me when they had the fins in the back. How do you outfit it for weapons?
Yeah, I don't.
Or are they scout type ships where it's just in, out, gone, where they cause maybe a distraction?
Maybe, but you wouldn't have so many of them.
No, you
would have to be attack vessels.
Well, depending on the size and what armament they have, you can actually think of them. Now that I think about it, you could think of them like annoying gnats that they try to shoo
True.
Away.
The tactical shuttlecrafts were a little weird to me. The obvious problems I should have with it are they don't exist in 10 years mm-hmm. in TOS, but I don't care. I don't care about that at all. TOS, they're not in a war anymore. They just came out of a war. It makes more sense mm-hmm. that they would have stuff like this laying around now than they would in 10 years. Mm-hmm. So that I'm okay with that. I just I didn't see it coming, and then we had them, and now we're about to have a fight, and that fight starts in this episode.
Yay! It's good to see what comes up.
What are your final thoughts on this episode?
So for my final thoughts, I thought I'd include the series as a whole. They say a story, be it personal TV or film, is a sum of all its parts. While I thank the actors for portraying the characters, I'd like to thank the behind-the-scenes people. Let's not forget the writing staff, the effects people, and all the way up and down the line. In regards to the writing staff, they've done a wonderful job taking what is essentially a one-off character, i.e. Pike. The character of Pike, which we only knew for 45 minutes, breathing new life into him and making him what I consider to be the best character in Trek lore. The effects people, kudos for them for bringing movie quality to the small screen. Every episode shot with vibrant colors and the sound, specifically in this episode where Jeff Russo calls the music cues for the original Enterprise. In closing, I'm just going to say, stand up and eyes up for all involved in this series, and they've really done a good job character-wise and visual effects-wise, and sound effects as well.
My final thoughts on this episode, because you guys have heard mine for the rest of the series already, is I need to see what happens in part two. I need to see what happens in the finale to really gauge where this episode will land for me. I said it a few weeks ago when the sphere was destroyed and we stole it. We didn't steal it. Pushed its data onto our ship. You know, that seemed like a one-off episode. It turns out it wasn't even remotely one-off. It was absolutely interconnected with the entire season. And because of that, it ups the rating of that episode. Seeing how this plays out and how it flows into season three will change the rating of this episode for me. It's just the nature of serialized TV. If an episode is great, but it doesn't mean anything, then it's not going to be rated as well as one that's okay, but means a lot. So I need to see more. I need to see where this goes. We saw a little, you know, preview of next week. If you watched it, if you didn't watch it, stop listening now. Okay, you're gone. If you did watch it, you see the Red Angel going for a what looks like a black hole. You know, something we didn't touch on, I meant to touch on, is they talk about how Burnham was obviously the one putting up the red signals, okay? Right. And that's why the mother didn't know anything about it. So I was wrong again. The mother wasn't lying. She really didn't know. Sue me. But, you know, now I want to see when we get to that point, is it really Michael Burnham? Is there something else that happens? Do we get another Red Angel? You know, does the mother find a way to come back even though she doesn't have a crystal? What's going to happen? Because I just don't believe Michael Burnham is going away. I do now, because of you, believe that the ship is going away. I'll probably be wrong there, too, but that is a plausible explanation as to how the ship gets where it is in Calypso. But we'll see, and we'll see where that leads, you know, and after next week, I'll have a better understanding of this episode, I'm sure, because they were clearly written as one very long episode.
And if you're wrong, I'll take responsibility for influencing you into my idea.
See, that's what a true friend is right there.
Arm in arm, pal. Well, maybe not yes. Arm in arm, but.
So, it's been fun talking about such sweet sorrow today, but this isn't the only thing we've been discussing here on the network, so here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Earl Grey.
But I don't know, like that one, as I was looking through the examples, I was like, that's pretty badass to just take that risk. And I think Riker's taken it back. He's like, you're going to kill Deanna? No, don't do that. But I think she convinces him, like, this is the way we have to do it. So I don't know. What do you think?
Wow, that was not even on my radar.
Well, of course, it's killing
I
Troy.
I know, yeah. You know?
Literary Treks.
It always frustrated me because on screen, we saw in depth the Klingon government, the Bajoran government, the Cardassian government, to a lesser extent, the Romulan government. We almost never saw the Federation government. You know, we three times we saw a president. Once we saw the council. The council was mentioned any number of times, but we never really saw it.
Warp 5.
I thought it was cool when he hits it. And it's like knocking wood on a door.
It's like, so did they install like a wooden neck for him or something?
Right. It doesn't make any sense. You know what? I leave that up to, I guess, people had less knowledge of biology overall, you know, the general public in 1939. So, yeah. Whatever.
We're going to file that under, we just got to go with it, and we'll file that under our neck cannon.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Melodic Treks.
Star Trek 3 was Christopher Lloyd's crew, you know? Mm-hmm. And I mean, his impact on that culture and race of Klingons and the rest of the franchise is still being felt. And to me, he's my second favorite Star Trek movie villain, right? Khan would obviously be first, and then Krug is number two after that for me.
Not the whale probe?
Is the whale probe just misunderstood?
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. And listeners, we have one more week remaining for you to enter a Captain Pike pin from Fansets giveaway. Patrick, the last time we talked, or last time you guys were on, you're still at 7, correct?
Yes, I believe it's still 7. Okay. The way to get in there, remember, it's one more week, guys. You have to leave a written rating and review. And if you do that anywhere in the world, you'll be entered to get this giveaway. Now, Chris, do you happen to know who donated those great pins?
Some guy. Chris Tribuzio, Chris Gribuzio. Some guy like out of Las Vegas. That's all I know, yeah.
So I'd personally like to thank you now that I have you on the air.
Thank you.
For
thank you.
Donating such a great prize to give away to our listeners. And I'm sure they'll go to a good home.
Did you ever get yours?
I did not. I have to.
Well,
I still have to.
You'll be getting one.
Thank you.
I can't have you live without it. I can't have Amy gloat, say, I have my Captain Pike pin, and you're sitting there with
me. Every week. Every week I see it.
And I can't have you not sit there and go, look what I got. It says La Tigre. You know, I can't have you do that.
So, oh boy. So get those in so you can be like me and Amy and have these awesome pins. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel. If you'd like to send us email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select the edge. That will come right to Amy and Patrick. You can also find a network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Patrick, where can people find you when you're not slyly winking, gesturing you knew something all along?
Well, when I'm not doing that, which is quite often because I tend to know a lot. Pat, pat, wink, wink. You can find me on Twitter at MagicDrop5. It is no spaces, and the 5 is a digit. You can also find me popping up on the Babel Conference. The last few weeks, I have not had much time, but I've been trying to get in there and see your comments, respond with the listeners, and, you know, just have a good time inside the community. And you can always find me on Warp 5 every other week with my good friend Brandon. So, Chris, where can people reach you when you're not eating a bowl of goop from Spumoni Garden?
I told you, chocolate chip cookie dough. Okay, when I'm not doing that, you can find me at the Babel Conference. I pop in every now and again. I'll give some comments. You can also find me on Twitter, and my handle is at TrekFanLV, T-F-L and V-R capital, and I tweet mostly Star Trek and anything else that comes to mind.
If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron on the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/TrekFM. That's patreon.com/TrekFM to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. Available through our special patrons website. Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/TrekFM. At this time, we would like to thank our great associate producers, no matter what time period they are in, whether it is the past, present, or future. Norman C. Lau, Tony Robinson, Thomas Puleo, Lisa Slack, Shoaib Mirza, Richard Rutledge, James Muldrow, Cornelia Reutner, Ryan Millett,
Chris Tribuzio,
Brian Maloche. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and The Edge.
Thank you for listening, and join us next time to see what's happening on The Edge of Federation Space. So, I thought of a podcast called Vape Trek. Check it out. Okay. So, welcome to Vape Trek, where we discuss every episode in Trek lore that's gone up in smoke. Episodes include, but are not limited to, Miri and the Children Shall Lead, Code of Honor, Move Along Home, Fraggle Rock, Extinction.
I was going to say, you got to get Fraggle Rock in there.
That should go into bloopers, dude. You got to add that in.
I'll put that in at the end.
It's been fun, dude.